And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
Great to have you back in the studio with us.
Great for us to be together. It's probably been a while.
It is. So you were at Build. I was not. I was at Tech Ed Europe.
Yes.
So how was Build?
And by the way, people came up to me and said, you won by picking Build. Like they clearly, the voice of the people,
well, people
was that Build
I won
was the cooler
by picking
event.
Tech Ed. So what is it? So,
yeah, that's, Joey Snow doesn't count. Okay.
Let's jump right in here. Top story.
Yeah, so this is new open source releases, and this is reactive extensions, which we've talked about before. The idea with reactive extensions is you can actually have code that is observing, say, an event, and rather than you get to choose how you react or observe to that thing. So, for example, filter only, say, if something's firing 30 times a second, I only want to know on the fifth time, or if this event happens, or and so on. And then do something based on that. So the idea is you get the power of reactive extensions for languages like Python and Ruby.
I have to say that is the best description of reactive extensions I've ever heard. Serious, I'm sincerely.
Well, we've only described it 30 times over the last 10 years.
Well,
but for people that aren't familiar with it.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And so now you can take advantage of Python and Ruby. Do we know if that's only on Windows or?
I mean, it's MS OpenText, so it's GitHub. And
okay.
Yeah, so.
All right. Sounds good. So
multiple platforms, for sure.
Speaking of the Build conference, this is a interview. It's a typical Charles Torrey interview. It's about 45 minutes long, but it's really interesting with Anders Heilsberg getting his thoughts on everything from TypeScript to C# and talking about how the next version of C# will be built using the Roslyn compiler. And just if you're a language geek or if you have just any interest in where kind of the direction of these things are going, it's always great to hear from Anders.
Yeah, I think the other cool thing is there's a lot of Q&A from folks. So people ask things like, hey, what about this feature? I like using jQuery. Are you all going to build libraries that allow me to have TypeScript definition files for jQuery? And that's where, what was it, Definitely Typed?
Definitely Typed. It's
GitHub
definitely, project.
Yep. Definitely Typed that includes a number of resources for if you want to use, whether it's AngularJS, Box.js, a number of these different languages that now have TypeScript definitions, and that's all community-based as well.
Hundreds of definitions.
Yeah. So definitely a lot of cool stuff and a must-watch video, whether you're doing TypeScript or you want to hear about C# or Roslyn.
Exactly. So I love that. Also, Pete Brown this week posted about his recent migration. He had previously been running a data center, for lack of a better description, out of his basement, and he moved all of his web hosting infrastructure to Windows Azure websites. So so really interesting for a couple of reasons. Number one, he paints a lot of personal anecdotes about how he previously could hear the servers from any room in the house because they were next to the ducts, and they would go through kind of all the ducts in his house, and you could hear it, and how he had to install a special, you know, air conditioner just in his basement, and how many hundreds of thousands of or hundreds or thousands of dollars it's cost him over the years. But then he focuses on the technical aspects of how did he move his sites from his personal data center over to the cloud. He mentions a couple of nice techniques you can follow. One which I didn't know about is a ability to export what's called a backpack from SQL Server Management Studio, and what this does is it packages up your data in such a way that can easily be imported into Azure. So really great, very pragmatic set of guidance here from Pete, and
for people that are looking to move their personal sites to Windows Azure websites, this is a good starting point.
Exactly. And great time to do that, especially in the summer months when it's super hot and your servers are not what you need to,
lower the AC bill.
Exactly. So next up.
So this is building games for Windows 8 with the Mono Game series. So it's a series of articles by our friends at Ubelly, which I Tom Clifton, and amongst others, that talk about using Mono Game, which is, think of it as an open source XNA, right? So the first article goes through setting up a project where you see the Mono Game template, you kick it off, and it kind of goes through the very basics of how that happens. And the idea is they are going to build over a series of tutorials the equivalent of a missile command, Atari missile command, where there's a little you like my sound effects, where it blows stuff up. So dealing with things like game states, drawing loops, different resolutions, and things like touch, for example. So very cool for those of you who are looking to get started with Mono Game.
That's great. So another new thing that came out this week, I believe, is the Nokia Imaging SDK. So some of you may have seen that Nokia announced a new phone, the Lumia 1020, which has just got an amazing camera on it, 41 megapixel camera. And along with that, they're also promoting their SDK, which allows you as an app developer to start taking advantage of a lot of the filters and built-in effects that are available to the Nokia phones as well. So this is just awesome. I mean, you can imagine with 41 megapixel camera, I mean, just amazing
things. I want this thing. So it also includes filters, resizing. So the idea is, I think it's a great idea, rather than say having developers have to build their own grayscale filter or whatever, where they're taking, you know, RGB values and then hashing them out to have an equal RGB value for that luminescence. Provided as an API.
Yep, exactly.
So everybody's playing from a level playing field. So this is very cool.
Yeah, and I know that Matthias Shapiro was working on some content. I don't know if that's yet available on Channel 9, but if it's not, we'll certainly link to it in the future.
So Lab of Things is kind of an interesting one that we're featuring this week. And the reason why is, one, it's really designed to be for research, but the idea is we can actually connect up different researchers. So that have set up different devices. And that could be Z-Wave devices, it could be IP cameras, it could be different sensors. Say inside a house and you're looking to do a study like how often you know somebody uses their computer or whatever. So they have a HomeOS system that's connected to the cloud, and you can manage that and actually change data. And two researchers, like you can use my customers, I can use your customers, to be able to get at data from our different research projects. So it allows a lot more diverse set of people that you can, say, choose. Allows you to be able to change your experiments on the fly via the cloud to be able to send new data, like, hey, actually, here's what we want to capture, and so on. So very interesting idea from using the Internet of Things, cloud enabling research, and then adding a network effect to those researchers where that you and I can actually exchange different participants.
Sounds interesting. There's a video you can watch to kind of wrap your head around some of what we're talking about here, but really interesting. And this, we should mention, this is from Microsoft Research.
Yes.
So this is an article that I really, really liked, because this is talking about how to improve data visualization that you might have either built into an app or for a TPS report that you're putting together, and how to make it better to map to what we as humans, these set of principles that I previously wasn't aware of called these Gestalt laws.
Okay.
And so the Gestalt laws basically take a psychological analysis of how do you present data and other images in such a way that makes it more palatable for humans. So, for example, if you're going to show, the various top paid employees at an organization, you would make sure that those are in, you know, kind of either ascending or descending order. You wouldn't want to have them kind of all over the place and make you try to compare, you know, what's this level versus this level over here, and just lots more, you know, deeper analysis into how you can make your graphs and visualizations appear better, which is something that I just never had a background in, but we all have occasion to put together PowerPoint slides and, you know, show the things we're working on and whatnot. So I think
the, yeah, I think the other interesting thing around that is certainly there are laws, like sort of a common, like, if you have to start off with something, use this. But what's really interesting is how much people are using actual data to change people's behavior. So, like, there's a news site called BuzzFeed, which is pretty popular. Yep. And one of the most interesting things is they call themselves a tech company first, because everything they're doing is to analyze, like, hey, A/B testing on which article name does this, which photo does this. If we add Ryan Gosling in a colorized image of this, if we add, you know, a hilarious picture of Will Ferrell, which one is going to get the click through?
Ryan Gosling, obviously.
Will Ferrell. But it's that sort of analysis that we sort of take for granted, where, like, you know, a company that is basically an Us magazine, if you will, of the web, is actually using data scientists to see what our psyche is, and to see that Will Ferrell is in fact better.
To peek into your soul.
Yes, exactly.
So, speaking of peeking into your soul, or something that has nothing to do with it, MS Open Tech is contributing Dash.js to open source?
Yeah, so there's a new standard called MPEG Dash. And the Dash is basically, it's doing data over HTTP. Okay. Right? So the idea is you can actually do adaptive streaming over HTTP. And adaptive streaming, people are probably familiar with the Silverlight implementation or HLS for Apple's. It's the same sort of idea where you have variable bit rates that are, it's adaptive. In other words, if our connection speed is great, we're going to use the fastest one. If all of a sudden we see that it's slow, it's actually, it's getting tiny chunks, and then it'll slow down and change that series of content to a slower bit rate. So that way it makes sure to have less buffering.
Okay.
Right? So a lot of people are familiar with this, with adaptive streaming, and it's the same sort of idea, but the biggest thing, there is no plugin. There is no plugin.
It's JavaScript.
It's just JavaScript. And we actually showed a demo of this using Internet Explorer 11, using Netflix data, using MPEG-AT build. And a lot of people were like, wow, this is coming soon. It is also an international standard. So a lot of people are interested in the key point here is we are actually making contributions to MPEG-AT.
All right. That's good to know. And actually, total tangent, but I just found out that my cable modem at home is apparently old. Did you know about the DOCSIS standards? DOCSIS 2.0 versus 3.0.
So
I kept getting these emails from my cable provider, and they're like, "Hey, we upgraded your, you know, cable. Reboot your modem." And then I go to speed test, and it's still, you know, the same old speed. Turns out I was running an old DOCSIS 2.0 modem, cable modem I bought a few years ago. There's a new standard called DOCSIS 3.0. Just ordered the modem. Excited for that to arrive. I'm told it can go up to 350 megs. Obviously, that's limited by your internet service provider.
Sure.
But just figured you reminded me I should mention it as a public service announcement, which brings us to Picks of the Week.
Picks of the Week!
So my pick of the week is called Fez Gamo. The name actually reminds me of one of those like game systems that they might put into a Simpsons or something. It just sounds so...
Fez Gamo!
Fez Gamo.
I think they just got their trailer. Sounds like you know, one of these made up things. But this is a Kickstarter project, and the idea is it kind of looks like a Game Boy, right? But it's open source. It runs the .NET Micro framework, and you can of course write games or other applications which target these devices. So really cool. It's exciting to see all the Kickstarter projects that are coming out, which actually are based on .NET technologies, and you can kind of hack or program them.
Yeah, actually, Pete Brown was just telling me about this yesterday, and I think the real interesting part is super low-cost device, and again, it's all programmable with a C# or VB.
Yeah, that's awesome. And your pick of the week?
Is GunCraft. Yes, GunCraft is a cool application, actually, built by a friend of the show, Andy Dunn.
Andy Dunn, the Z-Man.
Yes. Z-Buffer, used to write for Coding for Fun.
Yep.
So the idea behind GunCraft is imagine if you mix sort of like an FPS, if you will, with Minecraft. So you get the voxel-based world that you can build different worlds in.
I haven't heard that term.
Yeah. So for Minecraft worlds, and they actually have an importer. So like imagine if somebody's built like, hey, this is a real representation of the Las Vegas Strip or Disneyland or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can import that, and then all of a sudden you have these helicopter gunships. and it's just a very interesting, I think it's like chocolate and peanut butter.
Yeah, that's
like,
awesome.
Like imagine you're getting gunned and pinned down, you can actually build like something to basically block you from getting shot in the game.
Yeah.
Like this is awesome.
Yeah, that's super cool. We're really excited and proud of our friend Andy and his team, and it's already getting some great reviews out there. So go check out GunCraft and best
It'll
of luck
It'll be on
to
Steam
guys.
As well, so definitely check it out. And again, it's using, I think it's using XNA, so.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, thanks for joining us, and we will see you next week.
Thanks.